Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is Ms. Cornelia September, better known as Connie September. She has been a Member of Parliament for the African National Congress since 1999, Minister of Human Settlements Portfolio. She has served on various portfolio committees, including Chairperson for the Portfolio Committee on Water Affairs and Forestry, as well as Convener of Peace and Stability Cluster. She obtained a Master's degree in Technology. She is former trade unionist and currently serves on the Magistrates Commission. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
One of the things that I found very striking when I read about you when I was preparing for the show was an article with a title saying, From a Humble Factory Worker to Cabinet Minister. This is the story of a dedicated Cape Townian whose sacrifices reflected the struggle. And I don't think that anyone could put more emotion than this into one sentence. Does hearing this still stir some emotions in you on the long road that you've taken over the years that have brought you to where you are today?
I think certainly it absolutely never goes away. I try and remind myself most of the time about where I came from through pictures at home. I like the artwork that the people on the street does that depicts the sort of housing that we had and some instances still have. And so I do that, and when people come to the home, I say, that is where I came from. I, too, have stayed in a one-roomed house, and it so much reminds one of the road that we have to conquer as South Africans, and indeed many of the successes that we've had in the country. So yes, it's still very much with me.
There must be an incredible collection then of history within that artwork that you've gathered.
It does, yes. It absolutely is a good collection. I obviously look at my own photos also that I've taken at the different houses that we have stayed, as tiny as they were and so on. And I think there's no better way in describing and celebrating what we have been able to achieve in South Africa since 1994. When we look at where we have come from and where we have taken this country to, as opposed to just, you know, me as an individual.
And do you sometimes find yourself thinking back to those years pre-1994 of what tomorrow would bring, considering what you know today?
Certainly, you know, my daughter also remains my moral compass. I will not forget when she was a tiny daughter and we had to take the train to somewhere on the southern suburbs of Cape Flats, on the Cape Flats line. She couldn't understand why we had to walk past so many coaches and why we had to go and get into a coach so far when we had to walk past all the others. And I had to explain to her, as tiny as she was, not school age yet, that we have apartheid in the country, and that means that some of us can only sit in these coaches and others not. Some of us had to sit at the top part of the bus, whilst others could sit downstairs. And so I think if you look at the development at that level of her also, and you look at, again, these are the achievements that we have been able to make in South Africa, of where we've come to. Her children now don't have to ask those questions. They can simply get into, if they indeed get into a train, they can get into, you know, any coach.
It's a totally different generation now. And
absolutely,
that it's transformed within one generation. I think that is always an element that I appreciate.
Indeed.
And in terms of the achievements that you've acquired over the years, have you succeeded to satisfy all that you wanted to do? Or Are there still many more pages in the book of life to be filled?
Now that you're talking about a book, I've really been struggling to put together a book myself in, you know, depicting, I think, these things that we are talking about also. But when we answer the question, then my journey has never been a journey of me and me alone. My journey has always been a collective journey. It's been a journey of together we have been able to have achievements, we've been able to have challenges, and we've been able to say to ourselves, but what more is there that we need to do? And so I think that collectivism has helped my journey very much, because there has always been the helping hand, the crutch that you can lean on, or a journey of, in my own instance, the love and respect and the compliments from my late mother and the rest of my family, whose structure was extremely important in this. If you do not have these important structures that support you, by no means is it possible that you can, you know, walk this long road that Nelson Mandela spoke of alone in this instance.
And often I think it's those enablers that people tend to forget or tend to dismiss, but really the reality of an individual's success is so dependent on the collective efforts from all of those enablers around us.
And they need to be celebrated also, because without them, you know, you cannot claim any success, both of a country, you as an individual, and in most instances in organization we have learned that very much. We've learned what it means to be democratic. We've learned what it means to build organization. We've learned what it means to just talk about what does it mean to ask for a mandate. And that word in itself, if you understand it, means that you have to remain within the collectivism. You have to remain with negotiating. You have to remain with getting ideas. You have to remain with how decisions are being put together. And I think it's a very interesting world. It's a very strong foundation that we have been able to inculcate. And when people don't understand how we do or how we derive at things, you have to understand this background that I'm talking about, in fact, the sort of South Africa that you have also now comes from these great traditions of men and women that did these things many, many years before I was even born. My happy moment is the fact that my parents gave birth to me on the 26th of June. And I'm happy about that because it's Freedom Charter Day. And so every year when the country celebrates Freedom Charter, they celebrate my birthday also.
And this year, if I'm not mistaken, it's our 60th year that we're celebrating.
Well, of course, I'm not 60, but yes, it is the 60th year.
We were speaking a few moments ago in terms of our history, looking at the paths that our predecessors have undertaken in order to form where we are today and give us the tools and the drive. And in your bio, I read that when you began work in 1980, you were described as an apolitical woman, intent only on earning a humble day's wage as a textile worker in the Cape Town factory. And 33 years later, approximately, President Jacob Zuma appointed you to his Minister of Human Settlements. Can you share with us a few of the landmarks in your career and when you understood that serving your country was a big part of your destiny?
I indeed remember that very well. I was supposed to go to university, and there weren't the financial means to allow me to go to university. And so after matric, there were those problems. And then I also, after that, had a baby. It was important for me to earn some income, notwithstanding relying on the father to do that also. And so I had to go and find a job. And so all these different opportunities that were there, they were not being realized. And I said, look, I will go with you to Rextra Farm on Monday. So I ventured off to this big clothing company that employed about 6,000 workers then. And I sat in this big room of an interview, and they said to me, yes, you will get the job. So I got a job, which is a very silly name. It's what's called NES, not established elsewhere. Whatever that still means, don't ask me.
Not established elsewhere.
Yes, whatever that means, I don't know.
It's a very intriguing title.
But it was something connected to, I shouldn't attempt to explain it because it was as silly as it was. But they tried to get me into a more sort of clerical kind of a job. You have got matric and all of these things, so you must do this thing. And so that got me to land up in the clothing industry by absolute no planning, nothing like that. So when I got my first pay, so we grew up in this home where you've got to take your pay, you pray over this money that you got, and you've got to give it to your mother. It doesn't matter how big you are. And so I gave my mother this 30 rand. She says, is this all that they gave you? Can't they give you more? And that starts my journey of earning this 30 rand a week. And we had to raise a daughter. We had to make sure that the rest of the family is also sorted out. And from there, it was the year that the turmoil in the country was very much there. And I always tell people there was a stay away. And I couldn't understand what was all of this about the stay away. And so I came to work, and, you know, there was no one there and all of that. That was probably the first and the last stay away that they found me at the workplace. Because very soon, a year or two after that, I found myself organizing workers and slowly but surely started to get into the leadership of what we then called, our target was, we've got to get rid of the old Taxa Union. It was the one that was a very much of a family kind of a trade union that never sat and negotiated. They would have some tea in the office with some employer, and they would announce in the newspaper, the little union newspaper, we are happy to announce that the workers got a 50 cents increase.
So your approach was very hands-on, and it involved the collective of all the people that were working within the organization to come up and confront when there were injustices.
Very much so. We couldn't understand this thing that, in the little knowledge that we had, how is it possible that somebody can announce in a newspaper some 50 cents that they want to give us? For goodness sake, that's not what our life can be all about. And so we slowly but surely decided we have to do something about it. And we organized what was called one of the biggest and major strikes that the clothing industry has ever had in bringing out about 6,000 workers, boom, out. On the basis of, we've got to have a better wage. We even went further than that. When we did that, we organized the strike, and they attempted to explain to us, but there's an agreement, which means we can't strike. And I don't think those things deterred us. What deterred us was the fact that we have got to get a better increase and changes needs to be brought about. And so we did exactly that. So we went out on strike, and some days after that, the employer said that we can't stay on the premises anymore because we are not working, and they will lock us out. It was the best thing that the employer could ever do, to lock us out, because we mobilized people much further than that. We brought those 6,000 workers out. The union's offices weren't very far, lucky for us, up the road. And we were able to have them in the big union, the building, and of course the offices. We were then confronted with this family that is still there in the union. And I happened to bump into the previous Taxa General Secretary, who was very keen to meet me and so on. I was not interested in the person. But I think he realized that things have to change, and change will have to come about. And so we pride ourselves with the fact that at Rex Trueform we were able to organize, and we did not get an increase for the workers at Rex Trueform. Our strike led to an increase for workers of the entire clothing industry.
That's very significant.
For the entire industry, we got an increase, not a 50 cents. We got much more than that. I can't remember the figure, but yes, we asked for 15 rand. Yes.
Well, that's significantly different versus a 50 cents increase.
And we got that increase for the entire industry.
How did that make you feel?
We felt absolutely great. We felt this is the best thing. We think that these workers, who are mainly women, deserve it. And we think that this is the start of bigger things to happen. We need to change this organization. And I think the history will speak from itself. There was change came about in the organization of clothing workers that led to the formation of the progressive unions that then came about. Soon thereafter, we had the formation of the Garment and Allied Workers Union that brought together clothing workers from Cape Town, Eastern Cape, Johannesburg, KZN, Durban, as they called it that time. Well, it's still called, but I mean Natal, as they called it at that time. And we were then able to bring together, we brought together a group of people that were predominantly women. But this group of people had something else that were interesting in themselves. We brought together colored women, we brought together Indian women, we brought partly white women, but the majority of an African women. We brought the non-racial character of organization together in what was then. And there were very many dear things that happened to these workers. They suddenly had to learn the different cultures, the different races, the different languages. By the time when we were on strike in Rex Trueform and we taught them Khosi Sikelele in Africa, it was one of the biggest breakthroughs that we had, because they understood Khosi Sikelele to be a song for certain people in this country. And when we were able to bring that together and say Khosi Sikelele is a hymn that is at the back of the AME Church hymn book, they made the connection immediately. And out of that strike was born the fact that those workers went back into the factory singing Khosi Sikelele, Africa. They were taught that, and they believed that they had to open up their prayer with this that song. Those workers were never the same after that, and the employer realized that. They were called girls. They were called they. They went back after that strike. They were called respected by their names. They were respected by who they were. Their dignity was given back.
That is an incredible achievement, because ultimately it is about dignity. You want that recognition, and you want to be recognized as an individual, a person that is capable.
Yes.
We'll take a short break.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on Audio DSTV channel 902. Today we're talking to Mrs. Cornelia September, better known as Mrs. Connie September, who is currently Member of Parliament, the African National Congress. In our previous segment, Ms. September spoke about her collection of the arts in terms of mapping her visual history. Also spoke about the work that she did in the textiles industry and how that radically transformed the entire industry and paved the way for reform on a salary scale across the country. Now, Mrs. September, I came across a comment from a gentleman called Hasham Mohammed, who spoke in his capacity as chairman of the Southern Suburbs Legal Advice Centre. He said, describing you, "I met her in August 1985. I was a student throwing petrol bombs at the time when the state of emergency was announced. Her demeanour has always been that of a leader, but she is also a woman of humbleness and strict discipline. She has always had a deep-rooted consciousness of justice and is always willing to relate to any issue in which people's human rights are being violated. Articles over the years have painted a picture of a woman who has a relentless commitment to uplifting the poor, and you elaborated on that in our previous segment. Can you share with us, has it been your strong sense of duty or your passion for making a difference that has kept you for so many years in the political arena and attentive to human rights?"
It comes from the following. I grew up with a formidable mother. My mother was more formidable than my father. He chose to be in and out of our lives. My mother stuck it out with us. And she taught us resilience. She taught us respect. She taught us strength. And she taught us that we don't have to be nothing when we are poor. And so she taught us what it means to be loyal. And not loyal in the sense of you have to compromise. And she taught us that when a task has been given, then that task has to be done with the greatest respect and with the absolute 100% output that it requires. And so we were driven by these humble and noble sentiments that my mother had. The second thing, which is very interesting, in you saw that my surname is September. And in South Africa, there has yet to be an understanding as opposed to laughing about the surname September.
Can you elaborate?
The history, why there are those of us whose surnames are September. And so my drive around the fact that there needs to be this change in a number of things has got to do with those of us who have these surnames. Our history comes from the slave history in South Africa. And so the slave history in South Africa is depicted in the surnames that we are having and sometimes in some people's names. If you go around the country from all the 9 provinces, there are these historical, who are we, where do we come from, us South Africans, that I think needs to be dealt with much more. I was extremely excited when Judge Albie Sachs married a September. So we were having this conversation on the plane, and I said, "I'm happy that you've also got a September, and we've got to do something about this thing." Because the history of those of us whose surnames are January, February, March, April, May, June, July, and September, October, and December, and all of that, has to do with the fact that our forebears were brought into this country through the slave trade. And this slave trade got some people to deny us our surnames. I am in search of my surname. My surname, I'm happy to be September, but I am pretty sure that I have another surname besides my father's surname. And it's got to do with the fact that there were some people that had the audacity to call us what they wanted us to be. So they decided that if their birthday is in September, right, your surname will be September. If you were brought as a slave into this country in September, your surname will be September. Whatever that is, I can't elaborate on all of that, their thinking that they had. And so these things are part of the things that, in the question that you're asking, that drive me around humanity, about justice, about rights and what is wrong, and the fact that the history of South Africa has yet to be told in relation to these different people that we are having in the country and what it means. And so I ventured off a little bit in going to search. I've not been too successful. And I think there's something big that we have to do to make people understand this history that we are having. Why we have the surnames that we have, why we have the names that we have, what are our history, where do we come from, and where eventually is it that we need to take to, and what is it that we celebrate. So I'm moving a little bit away from your original question, but these are the two factors, my mother and this thing of this history where we are coming from, that drives me to do many of the things that I do. And then, of course, the respect for my I grew up in a Christian religion also, and so there was a lot of conflict when I entered politics, because the Christian religion, it's church that is extremely conservative, but I had to hold on to what the religion teaches you, what is right and what is wrong. So I find all these things in Romans, and I find in it, you know, all of these things, they were absolutely there, that says we have to do what we have to do.
So that validation. And what you're saying now leads me on to my next question, where I ask all of my guests who've come on the show, in terms of the factors that they feel have driven them, have contributed to their success. Some people have spoken about their mums, as you have, and your mum sounded like a formidable character. Others have spoken about hard work, perseverance. Can you elaborate on some of the key factors that have driven your success?
I started off by talking about the collectivism in all of this. I'm not where I am because I've done these things on my own. On a personal level, there's the family structure, and on a political level, there are the organizations that I belong to. Of course, the sense in South Africa that there was injustice in the country, and that the majority of black people, whether they were called Xhosa, Ndebele, Zulu, whether they speak Afrikaans like I speak Afrikaans and grew up in an Afrikaans-speaking home and in a community that was called colored, whether any of that drove you to the fact that there are people that need, that require, that change needs to be brought about. So whilst we have been able to politically free and liberate South Africa and its people, the drive now is that we cannot say that we have emancipated each and every aspect of this great and beautiful country, and therefore when we talk about a luta continua, it means that there are still many, much more that we need to do. And so whilst that remains, whilst there are poor people still in the country, there must be a drive of what do we do to make sure people don't go to school hungry or get up the next morning and be hungry. I have taken a view that one of the things that we have to do in South Africa that we must get right, each one of us, wherever we are, is we've got to get South African people educated. This link that Nelson Mandela speaks of that will take us out of poverty is something that we have to create in a much bigger revolution. Government has set aside huge amount of money. Education gets the biggest slice in the country, and so it's the right commitment that government has. But I think there's much more that we can all do in the little way that we do. Education is not formally sitting in a classroom only. Education is in very many different ways of how you can skill and upskill people. And so in my constituency, what I've done was I looked at the figures that government produced and saw that we've got such a high amount of dropouts out of school. We've got such a high amount of young people who matriculate and boom, that's the end. Nothing else. Our answer is government has made available funding. And so there's a message that we have to get across to that parent and to the youth that it's not that nothing has been done. There's something that can be done. So I'm saying that this revolution that I'm talking about has to connect with all of these different things that can be done to take people through. The Cubans have done it. The people in Venezuela have done it. They've been able to bring down this literacy rate. The Cubans now can capacitate and educate and skill many people around this world. We too can do it.
Absolutely. And without education, there simply are no choices for people to go beyond what they know. It's a crucial function.
And so my challenge to the media is also, what I've done in my constituency is I brought these people to them. So for example, I go to SAA and I said, come to my constituency and show them there's an alternative skill that they can get involved in. And great stuff, they brought a simulator there and it was able to change the minds of that young person to, what do I have to do? These subjects that I studied at school is maybe not the right thing. And the immediate answer was, but I can't go and do engineering. And the answer immediately from the FET college was, we can give you a bridge education and you can still become an engineer even if you have those subjects. So I'm saying there are all those possibilities that can be done. And we had some great success in the constituency when we did that. We were able to break the mold of it is possible. I will never forget the youngster when one of the FET colleges said, we've got bursaries that we can make available. Can you help us to mobilize? So we went to the school and we explained to the youngsters. I saw the fear in this child's eyes. And I said to another lady, let's stop what we are doing. Let's try and find her. We discovered that this young child is saying, it is not possible for me to take this bursary and study further. I just come from Philippi. I stay there. Can I also from Philippi go and do that? We had to take a step back and say to him, this is a free country. You also have the right. There are these possibilities for you also. And he felt that he just stay in a small, tiny shack. Those things are not meant for people like them to get involved. And I'm saying that's part of the revolution that I'm talking about, that we have to break down and make sure that how it is possible at a particular level to bring down to our people and let everyone understand. Even if I don't have a matric certificate, even if I did not go to school, my mother never matriculated. I matriculated. How is it possible that I matriculated from a mother that did not matriculate? And so that sense, that understanding of how we change that mindset is something that is quite possible. Nelson Mandela was a herd boy. He became the president of this country. Same too for Jacob Zuma. He became the president of this country.
It doesn't matter where you come from. What matters is where you're going.
Yes.
And it's having the possibilities and making sure that you can have the opportunity to take advantage of them.
Yes, absolutely. I want to say, my friend will not forgive me if I don't say this part. As part of what I said, you can break down and bring into the, in our instance, in our constituencies. I even invited the ballet group, and I made the link with them. I brought the Johannesburg Ballet Group, and I worked very closely with them. And what we were simply able to do is to say, here is another skill that you can go into. The ability to do ballet enables you to get out of where you stay. You will be able to see another city. You will be able to see another province. You will be able to see another country. You will be able to see the rest of the world. You'll be able to acquire the following discipline and skills and stuff like that. And I was amazed how they, when one of the dancers did the Dying Swan, I was amazed to see how they responded to it and said, but we also want to do that. And so I'm saying there are very many different forms, and I've been able to do that. I still work with them. There's hope out there for many changes that we can bring about in this country and its people, and in particular for women.
Well, I think the revolution that you are embarking on is fantastic, especially giving the exposure of those different opportunities and possibilities to the youth.
Yes.
We'll take a short break.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on audio, channel 902 on DSTV. Today we're talking to Miss Cornelia September, better known as Connie September, who is a former trade unionist and currently on the Magistrate Commission. In closing our discussion, could you please share a few words of wisdom, of inspiration that you'd like to impart to our young ladies listening on the continent?
I think what is important is that the African continent find itself in one of the most exciting periods, a period of recognition, a period of that in Africa we do not have to apologize for who we are, that it is possible that from the womb and the belly of the African continent, many great leaders were born, many thinkers were born, and that we have enabled so many things to happen, not only in our continent, in the world at large. And so the confidence that I want to instill into young people out there, don't forget this past and this history. Learn from it, because it enable us to go forward, but as we do go forward, we understand where we come from and what needs to be done. And I want to encourage them that, yes, it is nice to have a good life. Yes, it is great to have hip-hop. It is nice. Those things are not bad because we love them also. But it's good to have priorities in life, and it is good to understand and realize, where do I want to be? Where am I going to? What sacrifices am I prepared to make to go where I should be? And what is it that I can contribute to make those changes that needs to be? And what does it require from me? And the sense of the collectiveness, collectivism, that will enable me to do those things. And education, 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 for me, is the most powerful weapon that can make all of that happen. It is the enabler. It makes things possible. It will take you around. It is the aircraft. It is the ship. It is the car. Education is that vehicle that will be able to bring about those changes for all of us. I am still educating myself as I speak now.
Thank you very much for sharing those words of wisdom and your personal perspectives and all of the learnings that you've given us today, from having a recall, remembering our history, utilizing it as a foundation for the future, and calling upon individuals to ask what they can do for themselves and also for their contribution to society. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you to you, and I absolutely have appreciated the moment. Thank you again.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to Miss Connie September.